Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We got a big show coming your way today. Ryan Roland-Smith will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk some baseball with him. We've got John Clayton at 4 o'clock talking NFL. And from your Seattle Mariners, Jake Fraley will join us at 4:30. Looking forward to that conversation. And, of course, it is Tuesday, which means at 5 o'clock, El Hombre will join us on the program. Dave, Jim, good to talk to you guys again.
Hey, Bob.
You too, Bob.
Everything good back there? I'm hearing a lot of noise.
Well, a minute ago, Sky was whining and yipping, but I put Mikey on it, and I think she's stopped.
You got Mikey on the case?
Mikey's on the case, yeah. I had to interrupt one of his NBA 2K games or whatever you call
it.
Oh,
that
poor kid.
What is
it, 2K20, 2K19?
That poor kid. Yeah. Oh, he's going to be damaged. This is going to be traumatic for him.
Yeah.
Well, we talked, obviously, about the Patrick Mahomes deal. A lot of people talking about that, trying to figure out exactly what it means, if this is the future for all quarterbacks, who's deserving, who's not, how much is he really going to get out of it. What's funny is I feel like every time I see the story reprinted or somebody else's take on the story, the overall value seems to keep climbing. So it was like it was 477, then it was like 490, now it's at 503. If he collects every penny, I mean, by the end of this thing, he's going to have it's going to be $1 billion. Who knows? But it's pretty impressive. But what it's led to is a conversation about Russell Wilson and his value. And obviously that extends to Deshaun Watson and Dak Prescott, all these other players out there. But of all people, Colin Cowherd weighed in on this.
What?
I know. It involves Russell. So Colin Cowherd is here to discuss. Mahomes and Russell are the only quarterbacks deserving of a 10-year deal in the mind of Cowherd.
There's only two people I would pay 10-year contracts to in the NFL, Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes. And let me talk about that. Those are the only two guys I would give 10-year contracts to. Now, I do realize that Russell Wilson would be in his 40s for a 10-year deal, but my takeaway is you watch Russell Wilson work out, take care of his body. He's like LeBron. He's going to age real well. Russell's going to age real well. But these are the two guys I'd give a 10-year contract to. Lamar Jackson, win a playoff game. Aaron Rodgers, too old. Deshaun Watson, two ACLs. Carson Wentz, injury prone. But it's not just about talent. So it starts with talent. You got to have talent for me to give you a 10-year contract. But the reason I would give Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes that deal, and the reason Patrick got this deal yesterday after talent, was maturity. You can trust Russell Wilson if you give him a 10-year deal. You can trust Patrick Mahomes. There'll be no 3 a.m. phone calls, no embarrassing the franchise. You know when you drive to the facility, when Andy Reid pulls into the facility at 5:50 in the morning, Mahomes is going to be there for a decade. It's not just about talent. Wilson, Mahomes, that's it. 10 years, that is it.
That is it. And our very own Brock Heward put up a poll question on his Twitter page. And it says, so assuming Danger Russ Wilson would be on board, I'm curious, Seahawk Twitter, would you offer Russ the same deal Mahomes just signed in Kansas City, 10 years in nearly $500 million. How do you think it played out, Dave?
Well, I see the numbers here.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let me... Jim,
sorry, Bob.
You
ask
see
Jim.
The
Maybe
well.
Jim hasn't looked at the show sheet.
Well, I would guess that 43% said yes, that they should give Russell the money, and 57% said, are you kidding? No.
Jim, you are good. Why don't you win more of your bets? You are really good.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, he's got just under 7,000 votes so far, 56.9% saying no. Does that surprise you at all? Go ahead.
He's saying right now?
Right now.
Right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people might have answered it the way that I would answer it, and I'd say, well, maybe in a couple of years, but he just got a big deal for $35 million, so maybe that's what people are thinking, that, you know, maybe some of the no votes are like thinking, okay, well, how about in 2, 3, 4 years down the road?
Well, then he's, what, 34, I think, when his deal expires? I think he's 31 right now, right, DJ? 31.
Is he?
Yeah, and his deal is done at the end of 23. So he'll be 33, 34 years old. Would you give him a 10-year deal? I think I know Jim's answer, because that would put him at about 44 years old when it expires.
Well, yeah. But no, if you did it right now, Russell Wilson at 41, he'd be like a normal person, a normal quarterback at what? Russell at 41 will be like a quarterback at 35, won't he? I mean, the shape that that guy's in, he hasn't missed a game. I don't know. Even if I was as good as Patrick Mahomes, as good as Russell Wilson, I don't know if I would take a 10-year deal. I suppose if it was thrown out in front of me, I'd look at it and go, well, it'd be crazy not to. But, boy, I look at a guy like Mahomes and Russell, too. I mean, imagine what Russell's going to be making after this contract runs out in 23. He'll only be 34, and then we'll probably be talking about $50 million, $60 million a season, something like that. It's crazy. You start thinking about Patrick Mahomes, he's getting close to making $3 million a game.
Yeah, but at what point does it become prohibitive with the salary cap in place? Assuming that it goes down next year, which everybody anticipates, then maybe it bounces back the following season, hopefully, but it's going to be incremental. I mean, you talk about those numbers, Jim, and it sort of makes sense based on how things have gone, but there's got to be a line there at some point where you're going, okay, we can't pay one player, even though it is the most important player on this team, you know, 40% of our cap or 50, whatever that number is going to end up being. How could you possibly do that? There's got to be a line somewhere.
Well, yeah, but Bob, don't you think it's just going to be a one-year blip, a one-year downturn?
Well, but I don't know how long it's going to take for things to bounce back financially. I don't know how much they're going to lose. Well, I guess we'll all find out if the season is able to be completed and all of that good stuff. Are they going to have some fans in the stands and maybe not in other places? I mean, we don't have any idea financially what kind of hit they're going to take. So we assume that the cap is going to go down next year, which I think is a safe assumption. Does it automatically bounce back and exceed where it was the year previous to the virus and it's back on schedule? Or is it going to be incremental steps where it's, you know, a little bit each year and, okay, now it's starting to build back up? But to I guess, whether a $60 million a year, $50 million a year contract, is it going to go up that much?
Well, the only thing I'm thinking about, I read a story, Mike Florio, I don't know what he is, NBC, Pro Football News, something. I know Danny doesn't like him. I do know that about him. But, you know, he covers the league. And he was talking about, you know, once they legalize gambling, that there's going to be more money coming in from that. When the fans return, when they have new TV deals, we might be talking about this Patrick Mahomes deal being chump change 5 years from now. Not chump change, but relatively speaking, compared to what Russell Wilson might get 3 years from now. So, yeah, I think that salary cap's going to go shooting way up here pretty soon. And I know that in the short term it's not going to. Next year it'll be coming down. There'll be a lot of issues around that. But down the road, I think we're going to see more and more of these type deals.
Yeah, well, we don't know what the denominator is, right? Because the only way to look at it is percentage.
You know,
what's the percentage of the cap that Russ's contract would take up? And that's where you really get hurt. And in my mind, that's why they were, you know, looking at Patrick Mahomes a few years ago and possibly going to draft him. That might be, you know, a way to go because, I mean, what was Russ playing for? And this is, you know, 2012, 13, 14 dollars, but still what he was playing for
600 like grand or something like that.
700 grand. Yeah. So, and then that just gives you a ton of space to go and sign a guy like Clowney, you know? So, yeah, it just, it matters what, you know, we don't, like I said, we don't know what the denominator is yet. So, it is going to hurt your team. I mean, we'll see how Kansas City manages this, but we're already thinking that Chris Jones isn't going to get the contract that he wants. That defense for Kansas City really came on at the end of the season. And, you know, they played well in that, in the Super Bowl. So, now all of a sudden those guys are going to, it's a difficult thing to maneuver for these GMs, man, especially when you have a quarterback who, you know, and I don't think anybody would argue, yeah, give Russ whatever he wants. I mean, he's worth every penny. But, you know, because remember the years, I always go back to this, Bob, doing radio when Kevin Cobb was the big signing in Arizona and everybody
Calabro
thought we
loved
should do
him.
That.
Calabro wanted him badly.
Yeah, and we had, you know, the debate between was it T-Jack or Charlie Whitehurst. You know, Matt Hasselbeck was still in the mix then, and it sure is nice to have your franchise quarterback. And, you know, you just can't get a better person than Russell. And I would say this about Coward's clip there. I would add Deshaun Watson to that list. He said that, Mahomes and Russ are the only ones, but I'm looking at not just Patrick or Deshaun Watson's numbers because he's like 67% completion, you know, thrown single-digit interceptions. You know, his rookie year, he threw 8 in 7 games, but the next year he only threw 9. I like Deshaun Watson. I mean, I think that guy's a winner. Remember when he gave when they had the hurricane, he gave like $100,000 to
yep.
you know, down there to the people that were working in the restaurant at their
yeah,
facility.
In the cafeteria,
so yeah. I mean, to me that guy, he falls in that same category. But
I think
yeah,
he said,
I mean,
I think his qualifier on him, he said 2 ACLs. So he's looking at him physically, feeling yeah. like, all right, 10 years. Maybe physically, he's not going to hold up. I don't think it's...
Well, and with Mahomes, I mean, he missed 2 games this year. Is that right?
With the dislocated kneecap?
Dislocated
kneecap.
Well, it
seemed like he was going to be out longer than that when you saw the injury.
I know. But, I mean, Russ has had nothing like that. Nothing. So, yeah, I mean, I get his point. I mean, the health thing. And everybody says, well, you're going to jinx him. And, you know, I don't think so, man.
If only you had that kind of power. If only that were real. Yeah. I would be using that left and right on people who truly deserve it.
Yeah, I had somebody come up and complain to me about Russell throwing the interception in the Baltimore game. Because up to that point, I was saying, yeah, he still hasn't thrown an interception. She's like, you jinxed him. Oh. You jinxed him. I'm like, yeah. But, I mean, look, you are what you are. I mean, again, we talk about, like, you know, people don't get healthier. You know, if they're going to get hurt, they're going to have a proclivity for getting hurt. And so, you know, Russ just doesn't have that. And he is he's just healthy as can be. And we know how much time and money he puts into his off-season workouts.
Yeah. Bill Barnwell, who was on with John Clayton today, touched on what we were just hitting on in saying, you know, listen, when you pay a quarterback that kind of money, you start sacrificing in other spots.
At the end of the day, you know, I think when you make a decision to pay Mahomes or pay a Prescott, you have to kind of be willing to sacrifice elsewhere. We saw it with the Seahawks where, you know, of course, they paid Russell Wilson, paid a lot of their stars, and then they sacrificed their offensive line and wanted to go on the cheap there, and that didn't work out for them. So it's a tricky formula, and I don't know that anyone's really solved the formula of, you know, outside of the Patriots, solved that formula of how do you win with this expensive veteran quarterback year after year.
Now, he brings up the Patriots. Is that what it's going to take to make that work? Is these numbers do increase, like Jim was talking about? Do you need a quarterback who says, yeah, I want to be paid, I want to be compensated fairly, but I don't need to be the top-paid quarterback in the history of the league? I don't need every last dime right now. And you could still get, you know, $30 million a year, whatever Brady was getting, and, you know, technically leave some money on the table to be able to surround him with talent.
Yeah. Does anybody know who Brady, maybe we can ask the professor, who Brady's agent is? Because, you know, that's kind of what I worry about is that, you know, Russ seems like the kind of guy that would do that. Like, he wants to win. And whenever you ask Russell, hey, what's the most important stat, whatever, he's always going to say wins. And I'm always like, yeah, I know wins, Russ. But what about, like, interceptions or percentage? But no, he won't back off of that. He wants to win. And I don't know, at some point he may realize, hey, is it important for me to be the highest paid quarterback, or is it important for us to have a little bit of flexibility? And, yeah, and Brady did do that, but it's not like I expect Russell to do that.
Right.
But I wonder if, you know, if that's something that maybe his agent would kind of bristle on, you know, and
yeah, well, it hits their pocketbook, so it feels like most
certainly does.
Most probably would. By the way, Brady's agent is Don Yee, so that's his.
Oh, name. Okay. He used to work under Marvin Demoff. Mm. Yeah.
Well, isn't there that stat out there, Bob, where, like, if you have a quarterback that's paid as much as these guys, that they rarely win a Super Bowl because you can't do enough around them to create a team that's capable of winning the Lombardi Trophy? I'm just looking at Russell's numbers. Now, his new contract actually kicks in this season. It's 15.5% of the cap, his 31,000, his cap number.
And 31 million.
Yeah, 31 million, sorry. Yeah,
what a bargain.
A little bit of a difference there. And then it's 14.9% in 2021, 16.3% projected anyway at 37 million in 2022, and then 39 million in 2023. So, and I was looking at Mahomes' numbers too, and it's crazy when you look at his numbers, cuz there's some that are like 45, 50 in that range. Let me call him up here. I was just looking, okay. But 2020,
you're calling Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, Patrick
get him
Mahomes,
on the horn. Let's talk about this.
40 million. No. 40 million is the cap hit in 2024. And then in 2027, the cap hit for Patrick Mahomes, what I'm looking at here over at spotrack.com, it's 59.95 million in 2027. Mm. Then it goes down to 44 and 44. Anyway, the point being is, yeah, you're right. I mean, how are they going to be able to finagle that? How are they going to be able to sign a guy like Chris Jones? And I know you have the capologists on each team that can work the numbers. You can release players. But it's going to be harder and harder in Kansas City, I would think, with that contract. There's only so much you can do with those numbers.
Yeah, that's where restructuring comes in. You start seeing stories about, hey, Frank Clark has just restructured his deal, and he's going to collect this much on the back end, and this has been converted to a signing bonus here. And, you know, that's it seems like they finagle it. They just find ways. Now, when it's that oppressive, you're talking about $50 million. How many restructures can you do? How much? I mean, I think Barnwell's right that you do start sacrificing, at least in terms of investments financially, and maybe you luck out and you draft a guy in the seventh round and he turns into a star, or fifth round and they're a star like Richard Sherman or, you know, Chris Carson the seventh. I think you have to really start leaning on your scouting as opposed to, well, we're going to pay this guy big money to stay here, or we're going to pay this guy big money to come to our team from that other team. Maybe those scenarios take a dip and you really, really put the emphasis on your scouting.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you what, it makes a case for how difficult things are for Seahawk management because, number one, we've talked about this a lot around the draft, that they have not had the tank season. They've not been able to pick in the top 10. So only the first year when they came in did they. So, and Bruce Irvin was, what, 15? So they haven't gotten that. And then they happen to discover, wisely, a franchise quarterback who's just fantastic. And it's not just about, you know, it's about everything. And Russell checks every box. So, yeah, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is great, and we've been praising him and everything. But Russ, man, I mean, just everything that he brings is, you know, and I don't really know Patrick Mahomes that well, but I feel like we all know Russell. I mean, this guy is, you know, just his wife, Sierra, is just such a superstar. I mean, she is just a total class. I mean, both of them just as a couple are so good in the community and such a good teammate he is and just everything. He has all of those, but the Seahawks happen to find him. So not only are you not getting, you know, top 10 picks, but you're not, you know, you've got this burden of having to pay a guy who's probably, I mean, if you could pay either one of these guys, and I know youth always factors in, but there's no way I'm swapping Russell for Patrick Mahomes. And honestly, you could make the case. Let's say that the defense really comes on, and in the next 2 years, they win a Super Bowl, and Russell's an MVP. I mean, at that point, you know, you could see in a year or two where they might go, okay, the agent and Russ might go, I need Patrick Mahomes money.
Oh, boy. That would be... That's
you don't want that to happen?
No, I mean, I don't blame them. I get saying, listen, man, I'm look at my numbers compared to this guy, and I'm in that conversation, or I'm better in terms of my success, and I've won two Super Bowls now. I've been to three, and I've, you know, look at the numbers, and I've been healthy. So I get that feeling. I guess, you know, I guess you're just sort of relying on the fact that he's going to understand the dynamic of it and say, well, as much as I feel like I'm worthy of it and I'm better than the guy who's making more than me, if I do make that number, then I don't have the pieces around me to continue my success. So I don't blame him, I guess, is what I'm saying. My hope is that he'd look at the bigger picture. And now I'm implying a hometown discount, which, you know, a lot of people look at and laugh like you guys are. And I get it. It's not realistic to expect. I understand Brady did it, but that's the exception. That's certainly not the rule.
Yeah, I want him to be good enough to go in the next time he talks to John Schneider, his agent, Rogers, goes in there and, you know, okay, he's worth $60 million a year now. And you look at his stats, you look at his winning percentage, and you think about, you can even think about what Colin Cowherd had to say. I think he made a good point as far as it's not just the talent, what you're seeing on the field, but that maturity level that Russell's always shown. You never have to worry about him being out after midnight. He's always going to be there first thing in the morning, and then he's going to be the last one to leave. You love that kind of guy. So, yeah, you know, part of it, too, is yeah, they found DK Metcalf and Will Disley, and they found some other guys here and there, and you can give them some slack for – what they did a long time ago. They found some superstars in later rounds. They found Russell Wilson. But the drafts just haven't been that good the last few years overall. And whether you want to say it's, you know, that they're drafting lower, I understand that. But they need to do better with that. And we know that, I mean, you get 4 years. Once you get that guy, you got him for 4 years under club control, basically. And so they just haven't been able to find those star type players yet. And I know that, you know, Dave, you probably are thinking, well, what are you going to do? Just go find them on a tree and pick them off a tree. But they do. I think we can agree they have to do a little better drafting, and we can talk about Russell making all this money and screwing up the salary cap all we want, but it would certainly help if they drafted better.
I like that Jim provides your argument for you, Dave.
I've worked with Dave long enough that I know what I can picture what he's thinking up there in Sammamish. It's like telepathy. I just know that he's sitting there going, yeah, Jim. Okay, we'll just go to that. We'll go to that tree where you can find the superstars.
The superstar tree.
You might be surprised to hear this, Jim. That actually hit home. I mean, you're right. I mean, they've done well. I mean, they've done as well as anybody picking where they've picked, but. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing for the Chiefs. I mean, yeah, you all of a sudden, you have to start hitting on some of these guys. I just think that the problem for the Seahawks right now is just youth, and it's going to take those guys a while to get there. But you're right, they need to be producing while they're under that, cap control or the salary control. So, yeah, I mean, it does put a little bit more pressure on them. And again, that's what number three to add to the list of why it's so difficult for – you know, for Schneider and his scouts. I mean, you've got Russell making all that money. You're not picking high draft choices. And, you know, you need to get the most out of these drafts.
All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
The Mariners' regular season schedule was released yesterday, and they will open up the season in Houston to take on the Astros on July 24th at 6:10 p.m.
So they open with the team that is on everybody's dartboard. And unfortunately, they're not going to get what they deserve because of the lack of fans. You're not going to. I was really, really looking forward to seeing how each fan base, as the Astros went on the road, how they were going to be treated. And I understand they're at home for this one. But just the idea they're opening up with that team, the team that was notorious, the team that is the target, the team that is the villain. Yet it's not going to be the same because of the circumstances we're in. So we'll see what the Astros look like. I'm just happy that there's going to be baseball and hopefully they get through the entire season. But I can't help but feel a little cheated and truly hope that fans have a long memory into next season when the Astros come through their town.
Because they were all complicit.
They were all complicit, Dave.
Yeah. Well, hey, maybe you can buy one of those images. They say that there's some stadiums where you're going to be able to put like a picture of yourself sitting in. It would just be like a cardboard cutout, and yours could be you were booing, you know, your hands around your mouth, boo. Yeah. Maybe you can send one of those down there, Bob.
Well, don't you expect Marco Gonzalez? He'll be the opening day pitcher against Houston, and he was pretty candid when we talked to him in January at that winter press conference. Maybe he'll, throw one in Bregman's ear hole or something like that. That'd be a good way to start the season, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. I'm on board.
Yeah.
After Lamar Jackson planned on going forward with his Fun Day with LJ event in Florida, the current MVP has decided to cancel his event due to concerns of COVID-19.
Yeah, I'm glad somebody got to him. I was reading this last night going, come on, man, you're holding this in Florida, which is the absolute epicenter of the pandemic right now. I mean, they're talking about thousands and thousands of new cases every single day out there. And he was adamant at one point, well, it's still going to go on, and they were just going to have people sign waivers, and he wasn't going to sign autographs. They had, you know, a few stipulations that were sort of safety precautions. But, man, you just can't expose that many kids to something like this, especially in Florida. Just so I'm glad either he had, you know, had a shining moment that said, you know what, this is not a good idea, or somebody got to him.
Yeah, and I think it's just going to be tough because, you know, people are going to, you know, probably try to come back. I mean, you're probably going to have a hard time getting people to sign waivers. But, yeah, so and until we get a better understanding of what really matters, Is it the number of cases? Is it the number of deaths and hospitalizations? What really matters until they get a handle on that? I guess I would do the same thing if I was Lamar Jackson.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk with Ryan Roland-Smith, what he's seen so far. I've seen some interesting videos online. Ryan Divish tweeting a video of Jared Kelnick just absolutely mashing a ball. We'll get into some of that and some expectations with Ryan Roland-Smith next year with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We look forward to this conversation every single week, talking some baseball, and we're getting closer to talking about actual baseball just a couple of weeks away with our favorite Bogan, Ryan Roland-Smith. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Happy 4th, guys.
You as well, and I would imagine, I don't know if you've been paying attention, watching some of the videos online, or if you've even been to the park. Are you in town, by the way? I guess I should get that part clear
first. I'm in Seattle, but they're not giving me the credentials, the proper credentials to, I'm a health risk.
Oh.
To get into T-Mobile Park. No, I'm kidding. I might be heading down there tomorrow, but it's pretty tough to get in, apparently. You got to do this whole protocol going on, so. Haven't quite gotten to that stage yet in my career where I get the VIP access, but hopefully tomorrow I'll get down there.
Well, let me ask you this, because we talked yesterday about a 60-game season. I mean, typically with young guys, that might be the point where they're really just starting to get their feet under them, getting used to seeing this kind of pitching, getting used to playing at this level, and the season will be over. So I don't know what we can realistically expect. Is there anything that would disappoint you about this season, whether it's the record, whether it's guys getting off to a slow start? It feels like this is kind of a hard year to hold people accountable just in terms of immediate production.
Yeah, it really is. To really evaluate a player, and I'll talk to you guys about this. You know, you have, let's say you're a starting pitcher, you have, they're going with a 6-man rotation. So let's say all up you have 8 starts in the entire season. You cannot evaluate a pitcher, and a lot of the factors that you really look at for young guys is how do they look 100 innings in? And you just can't get that from 2020 and going into 2021. So I look at this season as a completely different way to go about trying to win games. And there's a chance here for the Mariners to sort of put the traditional, we're taking a step back thing, push that to the side and just get after it, man. If you win 10 straight, you're right there. At any point in the season, you win 10 straight, you're right there in the playoff line. So they should just look at this and say, you know what, this is like nothing else. Let's just get after it. But these young guys have this certain energy. We're not going to really get a good chance to evaluate them. And, you got short spring training with all this testing and everything else we're going to do, daily. And so let's just try and get after it and see if we can, how many out of 60 we can win. And then, get back out of 2021.
Hey, Ryan, I'm looking at, you mentioned a 6-man starting rotation, but you got Marco, Kikuchi, Kendall Graveman, Justice Sheffield, Taiwan Walker. Who do you think is next on that list? Who do you think has put himself in a position?
I think, Justin Dunn. I don't think it's, there could be maybe a little bit of competition maybe during, this little 3-week summer camp. But I think Justin Dunn is going to, not by default, but basically slide in there and, try and get some innings up. And you're not going to, it's not a situation where you're going to tax any of these young guys either, where it's, all right, you're looking good. Now let's just keep rolling you out. Then you get 3, 4, 5 months in, and then you run into injury risk. You really don't have that. You got 60 games, 6-man rotation. You don't have to worry about injuries. You've got plenty of time off. And again, this season's like no other. Let's see what he's made of. I think he gets that spot for sure.
Hey, Ryan, I'm going to ask you to role play here for a second. I'm going to put you in the shoes of Marco Gonzalez, and you're facing the Astros in the first game on July 24th. So the Mariners have the first shot at the Houston Astros. Do you throw at one of the Astros? Do you throw at one of them if you're Marco Gonzalez?
I don't think he will. And I'm on the fence. I've thought about this a lot. First of all, I'm like, the Astros are kind of getting off easy this year because there's no baseball. They have to travel. They don't have to travel the East Coast. That's where all the, that's where all the action is going to happen, right? So they completely dodge a bullet when it comes to playing the Yankees and then some of these other East Coast teams. Yeah, they want to rip in. But I role play, if it's me, honestly, and I've always sort of been on the fence about this. I think the biggest
revenge or the biggest, you know, statement you can make is going 8 shutout. So I think, you know, if it's me, I'm trying to go 7-8 shutout and win that game, my first game against him. I think Marco's kind of in the same boat. You know, level-headed kid. Obviously, he's not sitting there thinking whatever they did was right. But I think the best retaliation is just to completely just shove the bats up, you know, where.
Boo!
I mean, what a break for those guys. And the Red Sox, by the way. My hope, Ryan, is that baseball fans have a long memory, at least long enough to get into next season and let these guys have it. But do you think players will have that same kind of memory, whereas maybe they would be reluctant to throw at him now because it might start a fight and you got to keep that social distancing? You don't want to risk that, perhaps. Do you think players, you know, sort of catalog this and remember it next year?
There's going to be the odd player that it'll take 3 to 5 years to get over. If you were right there in the mix and you were getting crushed because they knew it was coming, I think there's going to be, you know, the handful of guys that this is going to last, you know, for them for a couple of years, I think. You don't really get over that, especially in the midst of it. I don't think anyone cares about the social distance if it comes to a point where someone's going to charge the mound on you. The other factor is, too, I think a lot of this depends on how the Houston Astros go about their own little PR campaign. And again, I've said this the whole time. If they just came out and admitted what they did was bootleg, right, and what they did was wrong, and do it the right way, well, then they're probably going to get a little bit of forgiveness, you know, from the players. The fans, who knows? I mean, you know, sometimes the fans get angry for 2 months and then they get over it. But the way they handled it, I just think there's a chance for them for this to stick around a little bit, especially within the players' circle, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ryan. I don't think social distancing would keep me from charging the mound. If you're mad, right?
That's right.
Who do you think's gonna be the closer this year? That's gonna at the end of the 60 games is their solid guy?
Man, that's a really good question. I haven't even thought about that. You know, that far down the track. Now, I said this at the end of last year, but he's not going to be there. He's not Santui by Lala, and then all of a sudden, yeah, he's not going to be in the mix. But that's a really good question. That's the other part that no one's really spoken about ever since spring training, is because they've got a bunch of dudes down in that pen who, you know, can throw gas with nasty stuff, and they're waiting to emerge. And the other flip side, we talked about this guy earlier, as a starting pitcher, I can see him as a bullpen guy. I'm looking to see if he can throw predictions out. But I think Justin Dunn, when this is all said and done, and you know, excuse the pun right there, but when this is all said and done, I think – from a year, I project him as being a bullpen guy. And, you know, I had him on the podcast. I didn't say that to him, you know, because of social distancing. That's my excuse. I didn't want to cop it from him. But, no, I think for him, I project him as being, you know, a back into the bullpen kind of guy. Not this year. They're going to give him a chance to start. But I see that happen. I see that Velo, you know, getting up in the 95s, 97s. With that nasty slider, I think he can be that dude out of the bullpen in the future. But this year, it's going to be interesting. There's a bunch of guys that, man, if you're in that bullpen right now, this is a really good chance to try and get after and get that role.
What about fair expectations for Taijuan Walker this year?
I mean, I think, you know, what's stopping him from you know, doing some of the things he has done in his career? I think that all the time. I know he's had some injuries and everything else. But it's the kid who was really starting to emerge, and then you hit a brick wall. So you look at the rotation. Okay, if, you know, obviously some young pieces, but you got Kendall Graveman who, you know, was up front, you know, front end of the rotation a couple of years back. Marco Gonzalez is what he's done. He doesn't get enough credit for what he did last year. You know, Kikuchi stuff wise, but then when you look down the track to Taijuan Walker, man, he has a chance to. This is not something where he really has to prove himself. Just go do your thing. And he put up some sick numbers, especially in the short season. Now, again, I know the injuries and everything else, but if you get beyond the injuries, man, he could do some damage, that's for sure.
Ryan, always good to catch up, my friend. Stay healthy out there. We look forward to talking to you again soon and getting your perspective on what you actually saw out at T-Mobile Park, which I know will happen any day now. So you're going to get that access. They're going to let you in.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Talk to you next week. There you go. There's Ryan Roland-Smith with us. We've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. We go back to May 18th, 1999 for Edgar Martinez's 3-home-run and 4-RBI performance versus the Minnesota Twins. That's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. Coming up, we continue our Mariner profiles on somebody who has kind of slid under the radar a bit. We'll take a look at Mariners outfielder Jake Fraley, who will be a guest of this program today as well. Talk about him coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor John Clayton will join us on the program. If you guys have some football questions for the professor, you can start texting those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Try to get to some of those coming up. But we've been previewing Mariners each and every day, taking a look at some of these young guys, because I think it's going to take a while for people to get to know all of these young players. You're going to have a lot of new faces. And one of those will be a guest of our program coming up later in the show. That would be outfielder Jake Fraley, who came over in that trade with the Tampa Bay Rays, the Mike Zunino trade, where you sent Guillermo Heredia there, and you got Fraley and Malik Smith, who, by the way, is probably the guy he's going to replace. You know, Jim, you asked, what's Malik's doing on this roster anyway, or what is the plan for him? I think he's a placeholder. I think he's a placeholder for Fraley, who last year in both AA and AAA combined, .298 average, .365 on base, .545 slugging, 19 home runs, 80 runs driven in, 27 doubles, 22 stolen bases. So I'm looking forward to seeing this guy. He's not a guy that gets, you know, all the conversation is about some of the pitchers. It's about Kelnick. It's about Evan White. It seems to be about everybody else but him.
Yeah, Fraley is interesting character. I watched Shannon's, and as you mentioned, Bob, yeah, .313 in AA Arkansas, and then he hit .276 in Tacoma. But, you know, I was watching Shannon's interview with him, and he was kind of worn out physically and mentally last year, and had a tragedy happen with one of his good friends. But, you know, he just talks about how it's all about his family. And, we've just been hearing a lot of really good things about him. So I'm excited to see him. I still like Malik's, but, you know, Fraley looks like he's definitely the future.
Yeah, I still like Malik's, too. Maybe they don't have another center fielder ready, and maybe it doesn't matter during the 60-game season. But I'm with you, Bob. I don't think Malik Smith factors into their plans unless I think he hit .300 his last year in Tampa Bay, so maybe we'll see that Malik Smith again. I just can't get it out of my mind, though, the Malik Smith that was just blowing routine fly balls and then having to go down to AAA for a while. But anyway, Jake Fraley, I think he's going to be the starting right fielder, especially with Haniger likely to miss the season this year. So we're going to see a lot of whether he can be a guy of the future. And he's only 25 years old, so he could factor in. And it might be one of those deals, just like it was with Segura and Haniger when they came over from Arizona in the Taiwan Walker deal, where you just went, okay, you love the hitting machine, you know what he can do, and I don't know too much about this Haniger guy, but Haniger ended up being the better part of that deal, and it might be the same thing with Fraley over Malik Smith.
Yeah, they sort of have that embarrassment of riches when it comes to the outfield. I mean, you brought up Haniger, which you don't think he's ever going to play in a Mariner uniform again, Jim. I think he will, but I don't know, you know, if he's going to be healthy enough to really leave a mark with this team, or what his future looks like. I think Malik's is a placeholder. You still have Jared Kelnick, as we talked about, Julio Rodriguez, Kyle Lewis is out there, and you've got Jake Fraley. So you feel like you've got a lot of youth that can fill all of those spots outside of Haniger, outside of Malik Smith. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. Maybe who's the odd man out of those four, because those four are your future. I don't believe that Haniger is part of your long-term future, nor is Malik Smith.
Well, yeah, I agree with you on that. And then, you know, you got to factor in Zach DeLoach, the second round pick that they have this year. He's going to be a college kid, so he'll be coming up sooner rather than later. And Braden Bishop, I don't really think that Bishop looks like a long-term guy, but we haven't had enough of a sample size with him yet to find out for sure. He's a heck of a defensive player, hasn't really delivered with the bat as yet, but we know that we're all pulling for that kid, what he went through with his mom, and hopefully Braden Bishop can be a factor too. But, man, they've got a lot of outfielders. I love the competition. Pete Carroll would love the competition there in the outfield because there's so many guys and so many guys who could be stars.
Yeah, are we counting out Haniger? I mean,
kind of to an extent. I mean, is he part of your long-term future? It doesn't feel like it now.
Well, I remember early on when he first, and you know, I think part of it was the sort of psychology of he was the minor part of that trade, you know, just as Drake Fraley was with the Zunino trade. And he just was such a surprise that I felt like early on, because I remember having this discussion like, okay, who is an untouchable? You know, and Haniger was one of them, like who they wouldn't trade last year. I guess that was 2 years ago, where, you know, he was just considered to be a core part of this team moving forward. And then he gets hit by a pitch. And then, well, wait, he got hit in the face, too, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then he took one to the stones. And then all of a sudden, you know, there was a core surgery. And now there's something wrong with a disc, I think.
Discectomy, in his back.
Yeah, so, I mean, now all of a sudden he looks beat up. But, man, and the way he came back after he got hit in the face, too, I was like, wow, this guy's a stud. But, yeah, it's too bad you can't add him to that mix. You want to talk about really competitive. But I think it just seems like with the injuries that maybe that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, and he was as close to a five-tool player as they had at the time. I mean, he could hit for power. He could hit for average. He played a really good defense, had a good arm. He could run pretty well. So, you know, it made sense that he was the guy you'd look at as untouchable, but he's been beset by injuries. And as we talked about, you know, the question, is he unlucky or is he fragile? Is he going to become more durable? I mean, I think those are fair questions to ask about him. But back to a guy who, you know, possibly has a future in this outfield, Jake Fraley, who we'll talk to later on in the program. Scott Servais back in spring training of 2019. Talking about him and feeling like they've got a gem there in Fraley.
Really didn't know what to expect. I actually saw Jake play at LSU back before I got this job. I was, you know, involved in seeing a lot of top players throughout the country, and he has really changed his game. He's had the last couple of years have been kind of bogged down with some injuries. That's one of the reasons we were able to acquire him. But he's got a lot more power than I ever thought he had. He can play center field, he can play all the outfield positions. He runs really well. He controls the strike zone really well. Really got a really nice skill set that's going to play at the big league level. Is he ready to break with us? And maybe, maybe not. I would say he probably needs a little bit more seasoning at the minor league level, but it won't be long if he continues to show like he has so far.
And then one more on Fraley from Nathan Bishop. This is back in July of 2019, talking about, you know, the underhyped prospects and the ability to turn some of those guys into stars.
Taking guys that maybe are flying under the radar a little bit, like the Jake Fraley's, who don't necessarily have the hype that a lot of these other guys do, and turning them into those great players. Because that's what the great organizations do. That's what the A's do. That's what the Rays do. That's, for years, what the St. Louis Cardinals did with guys that you've never heard of. They just kind of zip through their farm system. Nobody knows who they are. And then, boom, you've got this real quality major leaguer. So if the Mariners have that in Jake Fraley, and if that's the kind of player, and he looks like he could be a major leaguer, I'd expect him up here this year by September at the latest if he continues playing the way he's played. If they can do that with Jake Fraley and a couple other guys, at that point it really starts to get a lot easier to see this contention window opening up for them.
So sort of pushing that Seahawks philosophy, or what the Seahawks were able to do, I should say, with unheralded guys like, you know, like Richard Sherman, a fifth-round pick, an undrafted guy in Doug Baldwin, a seventh-rounder in Chris Carson. They've taken these guys that didn't come in with a bunch of hype and then turned them into stars. Hopefully the Mariners can do something similar.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Fraley can do this year. I think it's going to be fun to watch how he develops in those 60 games. And like we were saying, I think he's going to get every opportunity, especially with Kelnick not coming up this year. Julio Rodriguez, he won't be coming up this year. They'll be down in Tacoma on that taxi squad. And, you know, just going back to Haniger for a second, he hasn't played since June 6th of last year when he got hit in the groin area. And so when he does come back, it's going to be nearly 2 years that he hasn't played. I'm just, again, speculating or guessing, reading between the lines. When you hear DePoto and Servais talk about him, it sure doesn't sound like they're going to want to throw him out there during a 60-game season that doesn't mean much anyway. Just make sure that he gets healthy again. But the thing I'd forgotten about, as much as we like to think Haniger's a five-tool player and he was an all-star and everything else, he didn't really have that good of a year last year. I mean, he hit .220, struck out 81 times and 246 at-bats. So I think there's some questions there with his talent, too.
Yeah, well, we'll see what he does. I mean, he starts out on the 60-day DL, which I guess essentially is a 45-day DL in this setting. So we'll see if we see him at all this year. Meanwhile, we'll talk some football coming up with the professor. If you guys have questions for John, Clayton, text him in, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll talk to him next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.